Hello, everybody. I am Ellen. I am a compulsive overeater and your moderator for today's session in track one on the tool of service. We will have two speakers today. Each speaker will talk on the tool of service for up to 15 minutes. Then a Q&A session will follow. Our first speaker is Charlotte G. Charlotte G is a woman of transgender experience and has been in recovery for 3 years. OA and the virtual region have changed her life. Please take it away, Charlotte.
Hello, my name is Charlotte G. As I said, I'm recovered compulsive overeater, and that's the important thing. But also I identify as a transgender woman, and that is important both to today's topic as well as to my own recovery. So just a little bit about my own recovery. The numbers I quote today will be based on my own body and also the country that I live in. So I came into OA weighing 27 stone, and I now weigh about 18 stone, which is about 150 pound weight loss. But that weight loss has really just been the beginning of what OA has done for me. Before OA, I was a very selfish, inward-looking person. I wouldn't do something unless there was something in it for me. I would do stuff for other people, but I would always look for the, what am I going to get out of this? How is this going to benefit me? And today I'm able to live a life where I give service in many ways, both inside and outside of OA, that are unseen. I've enjoyed being part of the planning committee for this convention. And a lot of the work that I've done and will never be known about. And that is right and just, and it doesn't need to be known. Also, when I came into OA, I was a very, very angry, very, very frustrated person. I would always need my way, and I would always be making sure that I had that no matter what, even if I hurt you in the process. Is that true of me today? Probably to some extent. But am I the same person that I was back then? Absolutely not. Today I'm able to see that other people have an opinion too. And that opinion is right and just. And even if it disagrees with mine, doesn't mean that they're wrong. Doesn't mean I have to agree with them, but it does mean that I'm able to engage in that. And both of those aspects directly interact with this topic of service. I came into OA in early 2020, just as the first pandemic was about to start, and the virtual region were just about to host the virtual region convention. I'd only been in program for about 6 days, and I'd been highly involved in working on meetings, doing co-host and things, timekeeper and other things. And somebody who saw me came up to me and said, Charlotte, there's this thing called a convention happening. I really think you'd be good at being able to give some service there. Do you want to become involved? And so I did. Really, really loved that. And ever since that moment, I've never left the virtual region. I've served in a whole host of different capacities, doing a whole host of different things, from running workshops like this one to working with the digital outputs like the website of the virtual region. Each one of those opportunities has taught me things about myself and also given me the ability to learn new skills. And that's what's important for service. For me, there are three things about service. I will never give service unless one, I can accomplish three things. That it has the ability to teach me something about myself, that it has the ability for me to learn something new, and that it has the ability for me to serve other people. And there's a quote in the AA 12 and 12 that I really, really like. And it says, though tradition 9 at first sight seems to deal with a purely practical matter, its actual operation, it discusses a society without organization, animated only by the spirit of service, a true fellowship. And that is what is beautiful for me, that this fellowship, I don't need to know what I'm doing to give service. every position that I've ever held. I like the one I hold right now, which you don't need to know about, but I haven't got a clue what I'm doing. But what I'm able to do is say to my higher power, look, you've helped me every stage of my journey so far. Don't know what I'm doing, willing to learn, willing to give service. And so now help me. And every time my higher power puts people into my life who have skills and abilities that can help me to give my service, because that's what's the beautiful thing about this fellowship is, it is a fellowship. It's not about me knowing all the knowledge, but it's about being able to draw on all of those skill sets in order to give service. Anybody who knows me will know that I'm very, 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 very active in service. And sometimes I give service out of resentment. And I just want to share just one example of that with you. A short while ago, my meeting closed down. We took a decision to close the meeting because we just didn't have enough service members to continue the meeting. And I love being part of my intergroup. And I was resentful that I was no longer able to do that. And so I said, right, not a problem. I'm going to find a meeting, or I'm going to create a meeting where I can have a vote and write in my intergroup. And I did that. And I decided to create something that happens in the virtual region, which is a non-real-time meeting. So this is a meeting on a particular platform. And the focus of that meeting is basically, it's a gratitude, what they call the gratitudes, a circle. And basically what it is, it's just everybody posts every day something that they're grateful for from the previous 24 hours. I created that, as I said, out of resentment. There are now, I believe, 50 members of that group who share gratitude every day. And there are people who have reached out and have said that they are so grateful for that existing. So even in the midst of anger and frustration, higher power can maneuver things to deliver something, deliver me to do some sort of service that can help other people. And so what's important for me today to remember is, it doesn't matter why, it doesn't matter what the circumstances are, my higher power will always put me in a position where I can give service. Now that's about OA. I just want to talk a little bit about the non-OA life, because OA can't just all be about what happens in meetings and in intergroups and regions and well service. It's also about, now that I'm in recovery, now that I'm not binging my face off every day, eating enough food for a family of four, what do I then do about that? And how do I benefit other people around me? And I have two main avenues to do that. The first way I do that is I'm currently the full-time carer for my mother. My mother's completely blind in the house. She's a better cook than I am, and I've spent 10 years as a chef. But in the house, she's fine. But when she goes out, she needs support. And I'm able to do that. Now, I used to do that before I got really, really sick in my compulsive disease. But it would always be about, what am I going to get? Again, going back to the beginning of my share today, what am I going to get? What meal am I going to be bought out? Or what presents am I going to be just for doing the kind of things that a child should be doing for a parent? And today, yeah, I get some of those same things. Yeah, I get treats. Yes, I get looked after. But what's important is that's not what I'm doing it for. And the second part of my life where I give service is within my church community. I have a very, very strong presence within my own religious identity. And I'm trying not to talk too much about that to avoid outside issues, but I am just trying to guide this along and what service means to me. And I go to church. And when I'm at church, I hand out books to people who need for the service. I open the door. There's a 70-year-old lady with a disabled daughter. I push the wheelchair out to the taxi for her. It's those little things, the little things that probably nobody ever notices. But as soon as the person's not there to do them, you notice that they're there. That's the things that give me the most intense joy. It's because before, my life was always about, I have to be at the front, I have to be in the center. And today I can say, I can do things and not have to be there. Now, do I enjoy being? So I've chaired committees. I've sat on boards and other places. Do I enjoy that sort of thing? Yes, but I don't have to do that. there are other things that I can do, be fully engaged with. Service, although it's just one of the 9 tools, is one of the 3 important ones in my life. There are 3 tools which I try to work into my life every single day. And that is, and service is one of them, and the other 2 are sponsorship and literature. And these 3 things enable me to stay connected to myself, because that is amazing today. The fact that I'm able, so I heard this shared sometime during this conference, I can't remember when, but somebody said, I can now look in the mirror and look back at the person and say, I love you and I like you. And that's true today. Me being able to get out of myself enables me to now look at myself and say, yes, I am a nice person. Yes, I am able to help other people. Am I perfect? No, because I never will be. But I'm able to learn and grow. So I'm able to look at myself. I'm able to stay connected with my higher power and with my friends, my family, and my fellows in program. Do I do that perfectly? No. But by using this tool of service, I'm able to grow just that little bit at a time. Like it says, spiritual growth, not spiritual perfection. And I hope that until the day I die, I stay in OA and that I continue to learn and grow. The day that I stop learning, the day that I stop growing, is the day that I no longer need to be here, because I've learned everything that I need to know, and service enables me to do that. I hope something of what I've said today has been beneficial, and thank you for letting me share just a little bit about what the tool of service means to me. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much for your share, Charlotte. Our next speaker on the topic of service is Megan P. Megan has been in OA since 1977, 46 years. It took her 14 years to get abstinent in the program and another 6 years to come to agreeable terms with a food plan. Please unmute and take the mic, Megan.
I joined OA in 1977, and I'm in OA 46 years. My highest weight was 210 pounds. My mother was very negative to me. You know, I didn't know any better. And she would like object to every word I said, every sentence, even before I finished the sentence. And because my feeling is because I was overweight and also had very low self-esteem, I didn't have any dates in high school or college, and it hurt me very badly. I wanted to be like the other girls, you know, going out and having boyfriends. And I was binging all the time, like pretty much every third day of my life until I was around 36. I joined OA when I was 28. And I was I was confused, overwhelmed. I was very overwhelmed in life. And I think the biggest problem in a certain way was I had to be loyal to my family. And in a certain way, loyalty to my family meant overeating. Everybody in my family, not my brother, but my mother and father, they were very overweight. And in order to be loyal, you had to eat everything. I had to eat everything my mother served. And that was a lot of food. And my binging was on sugary food. It just made me feel much better and made it very hard for me to give it up. A doctor had told me about OA, and because a friend of my group at the time after college, a girl who married into one of the guys, she was in OA, and she was made fun of. People thought she was weird because she carried her food to parties, her own weight and measured food. And I thought, you know, I cannot afford to be made fun of. I cannot be an outsider. I have to, you know, I can't go to this program. I can't. Otherwise, I would have nobody. And eventually, about 6 months after the doctor told me about OA, I went to, my case, Moravian Church in Manhattan here. And there were like, oh my God, there were like 50, 70 people at a meeting, 6 o'clock every day, every weekday. And I really was very alienated by the whole program. I could not get what was happening. I couldn't understand it. And people were very cliquish. I say this because it's a tremendous service in OA, especially if, of course, it was in-person meetings. It's a tremendous service to not kind of group up, you know, after the meeting and walk out, you know, without kind of including everybody. And that's what happened to me. I was very alienated. OA was really difficult for me. So that's part of the introduction to the actual idea of service. So I'll start and skip to one of my ideas of service. I think kindness is a service. And this is what I mean by kindness. When somebody asks you, what is your food plan? Tell them what you eat. Tell them the foods. Tell them the details. Tell them the timing of what you eat. If they're asking about that kind of thing. Really, it's so valuable to somebody. Even if they say, you know, that's not anything that I want to do. You have given them a framework, which is invaluable, but what they can do to drop their own ideas into that framework. That's how I learned the most in OA. A kind way of speaking to each other. I really mean this. I'm not that great at selecting words, but I do know that I have learned in OA, you know, what's kindness to myself. And that is what I try to do to others. And that is to select words that are inviting, inclusive, not shaming, not judging, that are, you know, beneficial. What is the beneficial word? Even if, you know, it's hard sometimes when you talk, especially I talk pretty fast, to find the most beneficial word. And show interest in other people. What about you? How are you? You know, ask people, how are you? What's happening with you? Ask questions. You know, sometimes they don't want to, speak about their private life or even their overeating life. So you have to kind of judge that, but it shows interest. Even if you're a newcomer and you're binging and you really need something, you need attention from other people, still ask them how they are. And when somebody is binge eating or wants to eat and they're making a phone call, don't tell them what to do, at least not at first. The service is to say, I understand. Oh my God, that is so brilliant. I understand. I relate. We're you are not alone. we are going to get through this. We are going to try. We are going to pray together. We're going to talk about this. And then they, you know, there might be some suggestions, you know, the meeting, the reading, do the reading, read back and forth right there on the phone. I pray with people on the phone. Just like, you know, Holy God, please help us. Please help this person overcome this issue. You know, very short. Very short. But we have taken a little minute there. Yes, and read the steps together. That's another thing. And if people ask you a question like, what do you do if you are hungry before the time you planned for your next meal? Tell them the tips, the tricks, the attitudes, the thinking. You know, you have to be detailed. You have to be detailed. Not like, oh, you know, I pray. You know, it's like, oh, yeah. And I know I'm supposed to say to somebody who says that to me, I know I'm supposed to say, oh, thank you. You know, that's not a big help to me, not help at all. In fact, I feel even worse when people, you know, have these sometimes very unfocused general answers. You know, sometimes I think it's because they feel they have to be quick. Yeah, don't be quick. Just help me. And even old timers like me, if I have trouble with food, call me back. I think the service in meetings, by the way, I have a very hard time with service. I always feel like the word means I will have to do something I don't want to do. And I'll somehow be caught somewhere doing a service, like, and not being good at it, and or being in a bad, not, and, you know, failing, and then being told I failed. I don't like the word service. I really don't. As a human being, we have to help each other. In meetings, we have to help the meeting. We have to help each other. That's the end for me. That's, you know, what do you need? That's it. In the meeting, I think the timekeeper has one of the most important jobs, because those are issues of fairness. It's like, you know, at the end of your 3 minutes, shut up, you know, but you have to know. You have to know when 3 minutes is up, you know. And I think the timekeeper is extremely valuable. And it's not an easy job. You have to interrupt somebody maybe in the middle of a sentence, you know. Timekeeper, yay. And treasurer, I think also obviously very valuable, or you do not have a meeting, whether it's Zoom or in person. I think for me also, the attending a meeting is really a tremendous service, because when I come and I see even one other person, I feel like, oh, there's like some kind of unity here. I have a mind that's the same as their mind. I'm not alone. This is wonderful. That's a tremendous service to me. It's a big service. And I think putting away chairs, like every church, you know, went to a meeting yesterday in a church, you know, they want you to put away the chairs. Sometimes they're heavy, you know, but I do push-ups, so I can pick them up now. You know, sometimes there's a reason to exercise. And I can put away two chairs, not just my own, but somebody else's. And that's a big service to help the meeting continue. For me, it's a service not to say binge foods at meetings. That's for me. It triggers others to say their own binge foods. I've been to meetings where people mentioned, I mean, everybody binges on similar stuff. 98% of the foods that people binge on, or the ingredients are the same. And for me, you know, after about 4, 5, or 6 mentions of food, it makes me feel extremely unsafe. The biggest benefit I've gotten from service after so many years in the program and, you know, service, is that I now can say without feeling creepy to myself, you know, even in my business, what is it that can serve these people? I may not want to serve this client, but I can say, what is it that would serve them? And there's a bigger picture. Not because it's them and I'm serving them, but because what is the service that can elevate? It's a bigger picture than what can I do to get this money? How can I please them as a people pleaser, as my main character defect? And even though, you know, my mother was very, very negative, when she was dying, I was a tremendous service to her. And I ran to do everything. And my brother, he has a mental illness, and I am a big service to him. And it's because I'm free. I'm free in the main from compulsive overeating. That's what the program gave me. It served me. And then I can go out and serve others. Thank you.
Thank you, Megan. Thank you very much. Okay, we have a question from a member that I'd like to offer to both of you one at a time. How do you balance your life and service? Who would like to speak first on that? Charlotte?
So the simple answer for me is I'll let you know when I get there. That's one of the hardest things that I struggle with my service, is knowing when I should say no. And because I've struggled so much with that, I changed my sponsor about a year ago to a very, very service-orientated sponsor, someone who has given service at every level of OA, including on the Board of Trustees. And is a service junkie like myself. And because of that, she can then tell me, Charlotte, no, you need to either not do that thing or let go of something else. And that's what it means to that. That's how I manage it today, is with a sponsor. Just like I manage my food with my sponsor, and I manage practically every other aspect of my life with the help of my sponsor and with my higher power. I need outside guidance from outside myself, because I'm powerless over my desire to give service. So I hope that helps answer the question.
Yeah, I don't give service that much. I really don't like it. I you know, I do it at meetings. I lead meetings. I've been treasurer. I've been to the World Service Conference when it was in person, and I was on the virtual, delegate to the virtual region. It's a lot of work. And I have a business, and I have to make money. And I've seen that people who, I don't want to say it, but they like positions of leadership and to be in front of these groups. They're doing great. They are doing great because of my obligations to my brother and to my own life. It's like living a dream. I'm 60 pounds lighter, and I have dates. I don't have, if there's, for instance, groups and they need a leader for a meeting because somebody opted out or something, I immediately volunteer. You know, if I have that time, it's like, okay, here's where I can do service. It's very absolutely necessary right now. And I jump in. And other than that, I think, my main service is just being honest, which is almost completely opposite opinion sometimes of the readings, you know, and that kind of thing. I just have the alternate opinion, and it makes me kind of angry. And my service is being honest. Otherwise, I really don't. I don't participate. Maybe once a year at the World Convention anymore. I used to do a lot more service, but it was very difficult for me. I didn't like any pushback. I get scared.
Thank you for sharing that. Another issue that somebody's asking about, how do you know if you need to give up a service post? Charlotte, would you like to speak to that one first?
Thank you very much. And this is something that worked out with my sponsor. And the simple factor is, when does the service position stop being about helping other people? And when does it start becoming about me? And if I'm ever in that moment, and I've been in that moment once, I stepped away from the service position straight away. That's when it's time. That's when, nope, this is no longer healthy for me. This is about my personality over the principles of serving others. So it's why am I serving? And that's when I know it's time to change.
Yeah, when I give up service when it's hurting my feelings. What can I say? That's when I give it up. I, for instance, never lead business meetings. I don't care if the room is silent for 5 minutes. I'm not doing it. And yeah. It turns out a lot of things hurt my feelings. I'm still pretty sensitive. That's some of the things I haven't gotten over in OA, is being kind of aware of my sensitivities. Yeah. So I opt out when I feel like I'm going to cry. That's when I stop doing the service.
Thank you for your honesty. Here's a similar related question. Have you ever had ego come into play while giving service?
Oh, yeah, I wanted to beat the crap out of people. That's what I wanted to do. Oh, my God, ego? Don't make me wrong. Don't make me wrong. You're making me wrong. You're making me look bad. That's where I get confused and overwhelmed, you know. So the truth is, some people do make you look bad. That's the truth. I really don't like it. So that's what keeps me away from service. I'm not capable. I'm not. It's my fault to call it my fault. I don't mind. I just want to be like remain at peace, because my ego gets up.
Thank you, Charlotte. How about you? Ego coming into play while giving service.
Yes, absolutely. Wasn't so many weeks ago where I had a meeting with my sponsor, and it went something like this. But it says in this document that they have to do this thing this way. And they're not doing it this way. They're doing it a different way. I'm right and they're wrong. And her response was something along the lines of, yeah, and? Why is that of concern to you? And so, yeah, ego comes up all the time. And another thing that where ego comes up is when I'm chairing a committee and somebody challenges my decisions or the things I'm trying to achieve. And what I have to remember is, we are a committee. And just because I have an idea doesn't mean it's a good idea. Or that other people don't have better ideas that can make that good idea even better than it was originally. And I just have to let go of that. But yes, ego is definitely part of my growth within my service.
Thank you. How about for the newcomer, people who are new, what kind of service can they give? Somebody says, I'm newly recovered. What should my focus be on in regards to service? Charlotte, please.
Yeah, so my whole meeting, it started the same week I came into recovery. And practically all the roles were vacant. And so I stood up and I became timekeeper. And it doesn't take too much to have a mobile phone in your hand and watch a clock. And when it gets down to 3 minutes, come off mute and say time. Look for something that's nice and simple, that's well within your abilities, and then do that thing. Another option is, do you work professionally? If so, what do you do? Do you work within the finance field? If you do, then think about serving as a treasurer. Like, work, give service at your strengths. Or if you're involved in technical work, maybe look at webmaster or committees that work with digital products, that sort of thing. There are lots of different avenues. Look for your strengths and then look for something in a way that can play to those strengths. And I also engage in service that I have no knowledge whatsoever about now, but I definitely didn't do that at the beginning. So just look for the nice and simple things and the things that feed into you and what makes you tick.
I think a service, I really mean this, I think service is really being regular at meetings, so showing up. Believe me, if you show up, there'll be definitely time for a service that you will be asked to perform, because not everybody else is showing up. And, you know, there are things that are going to be easy to do. I think, service is when people ask for, you know, we have some time. Does anybody have an idea for what to do to, you know, play out the meeting? If you, you know, have a piece of literature ready, that's a service to give your ideas. As I said before, I think if it's an in-person meeting, putting away the chairs. You know, one of the biggest services is negotiating with locations for, that's maybe advanced for a newcomer, for space in a place. But hey, if you're in real estate, that's one of those things you might be able to do. I think service is giving a dollar, $5, you know, a monthly amount to the meeting, to OA World Service. I think service is attending this meeting. I see that 40 people are on here. That's a big service to me. That's a tremendous service. And, you know, all of us are together. That's truly the biggest service that I can get from OA. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Megan and Charlotte. This is a question about related. You were talking about in-person meetings and virtual meetings. In this day and age, when one attends meetings every day virtually, how would you balance service between the different meetings, since there's not a particular home group, so to say? Is that an issue for either one of you, that Charlotte?
So you mightn't have a home group, but there'll be a group where you feel are your people. So I'm a woman of trans experience, so that's maybe an LGBTQ meeting. Or it may be a big book focused meeting. Or it may be a meeting that just happens on a Wednesday, because Wednesday is your day off work and that's just when you have the time. And then just like serve with that meeting. The majority of your service, absolutely give service elsewhere if you can, but support that meeting your most. And then if you can, then give service beyond the meeting level, like the intergroup or the region, but always go through that home meeting. It mightn't be a home meeting, i.e. round the corner, but you can still have a digital home meeting. And that's how I identify today. And my Wednesday night, 7:30 UK time, New Freedom meeting is my home meeting, and probably always will be, as long as it exists, because it's where I found my first sponsor and where I found my recovery. And so that's where I identify. Those are my people.
I think it's very important to be, I think it's very important to be recognized. You know, sometimes it's really important not to be recognized, but sometimes it's really important to get a home meeting at digital. You know, you'd be surprised. People, they see you and they think, oh, she's here. You know, that's your home meeting. That is your home meeting. You know, if you see people saying, oh, hi, you know, it's great to see you again. That's your home meeting. So I think part of the question was, you know, what how to do service when you're at different digital meetings. So you got maybe one or two homes. It's like a real home and a vacation home. those pick two, one or two, and dig in. Dig in right there. You know those people. You can handle those people. Do the timing. Timing on the web is really important, really important. And, speaking up, saying time, you know, when, you know, people go over because either they don't see you like, you know, like holding the clock. They don't see it. They don't see it. And I'm not blaming them. Say time, you know, that's bold. That's a service. You know, nobody knows that they're supposed to end unless you actually say end, you know. Those things are really that, you know, I time everywhere I go. I hate it. I do not like timing. And I'm just, that's a really, you know, nobody seems to like it. It's kind of boring. But I do it, you know, it's like, damn, that meeting is not going to get going until somebody gets a timer. So I got to do it.
Thank you. Here's a question related to service and sponsoring. How do you encourage your sponsees to give back to OA? Go ahead, Charlotte, please.
Yeah, I still is my sponsees from the very, very beginning. I do three things. The first thing I do is, in order to work with me, a sponsee has to make at least one phone call to somebody in OA who has less time in the program than they do every week. And so that they're using the tool of telephone, but they're also given service by doing that. Now, they can do other outreach calls, however many they want, to whoever they want, but at least one to somebody who is newer to program than they are. And I've worked with people with 20 years in the program. I've worked with people who it's their first day. And if you've been in program for half an hour and somebody's been in 10 minutes, you have something that they don't yet, which is 30 minutes of recovery. The second aspect of that is I get them to either prepare a share. My recovery is big book meetings, so I get them to look at what is the literature going to be next week, choose one of those paragraphs and pull out something that speaks to you. And even if it's just like, I like this line, just come off mute and say that, because you telling people that you've heard something that you like might encourage them to expand upon their thoughts around the same. And then the third thing I do is, once they're comfortable in meetings, I then get them to give some sort of service in that meeting. Maybe it's a timer or a co-host or something. And then as they advance through program, then we work on service beyond the group level as well. Just started from day one. Start by in asking them to do something. No, it doesn't have to be the telephone, but do something that is going to help them give service. And that's the approach I take.
Yeah, I have enough trouble asking sponsees to be abstinent, you know. Services, like, and I have, they have trouble getting on meetings. They're older women and they're nervous. And they don't handle Zoom well. And so my service to them is to try to help them with the what to click next. And I might have to do that 30 times. And a lot of times they don't want to, first of all, they don't want to be abstinent. They can't. And I have a lot of trouble, especially during the virus, getting them to meetings, on online meetings. Nobody really liked it. Some people didn't like it. I like it, but it's a problem getting them to meetings. And that's my first job, is to have them help themselves by getting to meetings. That's all. I'm kind of slow that way. Since I find service very difficult, I'm not pushing them. I'm not. I'm sorry. The only benefit is that they get to participate and stay in a meeting. And they're very happy when they say, I timed the meeting. And I think, oh, God, okay. You know, after 46 years, I think, wow, that's great. And it is. Actually, it is great. So it's helpful to them to do service. So they feel proud of themselves.
Okay, let me. Here's a very interesting question that is related to the second part of service. This member says, it's the second part of service that trips me up. We are the message. In a world that is talking about body image and weight loss, how am I the message if I'm not a size 12 or, well, that's even a 6 or a slim size, a model size? Charlotte, please.
So I'm going to talk to this person as if they're one of my sponsees. So the first thing I would say is this. Please let go of what society are telling you. Just because you are bigger than the norm doesn't mean that you're unhealthy. I've lost 150 pounds. Now, by society standards, I'm still fat and overweight, and that's fine. But I'm able to do things today that I couldn't have done before. Anybody who knows me, including some of my oldest and closest, are so surprised when I run down the shopping street in my hometown to catch up, because before I could hardly walk down the blooming thing. And just let go of society's expectations. And so that would be the first thing I would say. And the second thing I would say is, are you making progress on that path? The big book talks about spiritual advancement, not spiritual perfection. So am I working towards that? And if I'm not, then what do I need to do? What do I need to change within my meal plan, within work and the tools, within the steps and the traditions? What do I need to do to change that and work that through with my sponsor? And so those would be the things that I would say around the question. Not sure if that's helpful, but that's what I have. Thank you.
I'm quite sure people will find it helpful. Megan, would you like to speak to that?
Yeah, I think that's an extremely, extremely difficult. I acknowledge that. I think that you're absolutely right. It's a tough, it's a tough space to be in. It's, you know, you walk around in a bigger body and people either look at you and it's not pleasant. It's just not. It's really not. And I think a commitment to this program, you have to make that a narrow view. I am looking to look different. I am looking to lose weight. I am trying to lose weight. I have that self-esteem. And it's very hard. It's very hard to say, you know, I'm healthy, but I'm bigger than what even I would like to be. And certainly that others would like me to be. I could never remove myself from others' opinion of me. I couldn't do it.
Thank you, Megan. Thank you so much, speakers.